I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Today, a one-hour edition of Stage and Studio. First up, we feature Little Shop of Horrors at Portland Center Stage at the Armory. It's the iconic hit musical currently running till October 16th. We're listening to the live singing right now with my guests. Then we'll hear from playwright Jeannie Sakata about Hold These Truths, the story of civil rights hero Gordon Hirabayashi, who challenged Japanese-American internment during World War II. And in the last part of the hour, we'll talk with Lobsang Tenzin and Barry Hunt about the film The Lower Rooms at the Oregon Independent Film Festival. That screens September 23rd at 9:45 p.m. at Clinton Street Theater. And we'll offer tickets to all of these shows, Portland Center Stage, The Lower Rooms, and a copy of Nisi Shaw's book Everfair, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. And that's what I'm talking about. That was a great song. You guys did a fabulous job singing that. And it was live, right?
Yeah.
It was live.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio are three very talented singer-actresses. We just heard singing live at Portland Center Stage, Little Shop of Horrors. Alexis Tidwell, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
You play Crystal, and Johari Nandi Mackey, welcome.
Thank you.
And you play Chiffon.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to Stage and Studio. You know, I don't want to say that you're a Greek chorus, but you sort of are.
We are.
We are, yep.
Yeah. So you know, you comment on all the action that's happening in Little Shop of Horrors, mm-hmm. every single moment practically, mm-hmm. right? So you sort of are a Greek chorus.
Absolutely.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. So is this the first time each of you have done the musical?
Well, this actually is not my first time. I've played this role before, but...
Me, Johari, this is my first time doing it professionally, but I was in the show in high school.
Also, you have done the show, both
of yes.
you.
Yes. Yeah. Now, we're both familiar with it.
Yeah,
yes.
Of course. So, the backstory of Little Shop is that it was first a 1960s movie by Roger Corman that starred a very young and unknown at the time, Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
You both have been in the show. You want to share the plot, take turns sharing the plot here? Of
Go
what Little die. Shop is about?
Yeah, Little Shop is about opportunity. Yeah. No. Little Shop is about a guy who's kind of just been kicked down his whole life and told no and not really given any opportunity. He's grown up in Skid Row, which is this really run down, kind of sad place where nobody
yeah.
can just really make it to the top. And he gets presented with this kind of weird opportunity to... exchange human lives for success. And he gets the opportunity from the wonderful plant that we all love, Audrey, too. And
Audrey, too. We'll talk about the plant pretty
tell
soon.
Tell you the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he Audrey, too, convinces him that if you just do what I want you to do, which is feed me people.
Feed me. I remember that line.
Then
feed
I will bring you all the success in the world that you mm-hmm. thought you would never get. And so he's faced with the right thing or the things he wants in mm-hmm. life, and he chooses a little too late the right thing to do.
Mm.
It's a love story.
Yeah.
Love story, definitely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's also, you know, a little bit of horror with
yeah.
the
yeah.
plant,
absolutely.
Right? Because it's a carnivorous mm-hmm. eating plant.
Absolutely.
Or carnivorous plant. Yeah. It likes to eat people.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you three, I'm giving Ebony space here, too,
yeah.
because
mm-hmm.
you're a trio. Well, you know, you keep the action moving.
Absolutely.
Because you're commenting on everything. And you're kind of singing through all of the scenes.
Yeah, we are witness to everything. At the very beginning of the show, we tell you, look, we were there for the whole
yep.
thing, so now we're going to tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see us in it, but then you'll also see us being very aware of what's going on.
Yeah,
but then also very present.
Yes, that's what's so beautiful about it is the urchins, we at some points are commenting on what's going on. At some points we're helping you know how to feel because we've already experienced it. And other points we're actually in the moment of the scene and experience it for the first time. So we're really like
you're reacting
on a ride
to
with
everything.
The audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite? I guess, you know, I'm sure when you're doing a musical, there are times that this is your favorite song, but then you get sick of it. So you have a new favorite song. At the moment, what's your favorite song from the show?
I will say for the majority of the show, Mushnick and Son has been one of my favorites. I just love that, like...
Is it like a ballad? I don't remember
it's
that song.
It's like a Jewish song. It's like...
The tango.
Yeah,
oh.
like, and I love it. I love it. It's just so... it moves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. Yeah. How about you?
Mine would have to be Get It, which is the Plant's big song, mm-hmm. is when he's letting him know what you need to do. You need to feed me. And where the urchins are on stage, and we're not supposed to be stealing a lot of focus, but I find myself rocking out to that song on the stairs, and I'm trying not to go so hard,
yeah.
but it's such a rock ballad, and they're just jamming.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, so how would you describe the style of the songs? You know?
It's like Motown yeah. mixed with...
rock.
Yeah. It has the to me, it mirrors the style of music, all the genres in the 60s that mm-hmm. were popular.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, and is some of it a cappella for you, or is it all kind of, it's a little doo-wop-y too, right?
Oh, it's very yes. doo-wop.
Very doo-wop-y.
Yes, for sure, the 60s. There's one small part that's a cappella, but that's just Ebony. Ebony's mm-hmm. has a quick moment where she's a cappella, mm-hmm. but the rest of it is accompanied.
Well, we had, you know, talked about how you comment on every single scene. So you really are watching everything. Cool. So are you in stage all the time?
The entire act one, we are on stage.
We are on stage, yeah. Yep.
So what's the transitions that the trio goes through, you know, as you're watching this unfold? What's your actor backstories?
Mm. Well,
ooh. As a whole.
Yeah.
We want what a lot of the other people in Skid Row want, and that's our shot, our time in the spotlight. So even though we know the action of the show, we still show that this was our time of elevation as well. We went from being one thing to being another, and we grew from these like kind of street ratty girls to very put together, supreme like women because of the success of Seymour as well.
Oh, right. So you rise and fall with Seymour. Then.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And all of Skid Row rises mm-hmm. with Seymour. And something that the three of us talk about all the time is that, it's a little backstory that we have for ourselves mm-hmm. is that we know that we are young black girls in the 60s, and so we know that success is not as easy for us. And so we're going to take the opportunity to ride this thing up. We're going to save the money that we get in this mm-hmm. situation, and we're going to go to L.A. or we're going to go to Detroit and, you know, mm-hmm. be these big Motown stars. Yeah. Like, that's the kind of backstory that we kind of have.
And the urchins aren't all good, you know. Everybody in this show feeds off of something they want, and mm-hmm. there are parts in the show where we kind of... We feed off of Seymour and what he's going through to get what we want. It's a deep show.
Yeah, it is. And it's great to hear your backstory. It makes it even deeper. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. My guests are Alexis Tidwell and Johari Nandimaki. And they're both from Portland Center Stage's Little Shop of Horrors. It's running through October 16th on the main stage at the Armory in the Pearl District. And we have two tickets to offer for memberships at 1-877-500-5266. And that spells KBOO or KBOO.FM. You can donate online. And it's from what I hear, I follow Facebook comments a lot. And a lot of people that I respect have just had a great time at this show and really recommend it. And there's a deeper level to it, as you are talking about, you know, the price of fame and success mm-hmm. and what do we really need in life. And so there's a lot of issues there that actually get dealt with in a fun way. I'm Dee Mae Roberts with the Membership Drive Edition, a whole hour of Stage and Studio. And with me are Johari Nandimaki and Alexis Tidwell. Hello.
Hi.
From Portland Center Stage's Little Shop of Horrors. And during the break, you were talking about how you hadn't heard yourselves singing that before. So it sounded good to you. Right?
Yeah.
We sound good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there is a lot in harmonies. You know, when you have three-part harmony, it is so challenging. And to get it right every single time, I personally have trouble with harmony. So what is the secret to you when you are singing? Singing all three of you together, and you're commenting on Little Shop of Horrors. Horrors. Horror. The horrors.
Well, the one thing that I appreciate about these other two women is that they come already very competent musically. They already know their parts. They already have the skill of blending. They already have the skill of being able to sing their part and not necessarily move to other people's parts. So I think they already bring so much to the table.
Because it's hard to listen to the others without singing what they're singing, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And keeping your own
You have to be really confident in your own part.
We went through some of that in the rehearsal process, and we had some great people to look at us over the piano and say, that don't sound
that'd be
right,
Rick
Jeffrey
Lewis.
And Rick.
Hashtag Jeffrey Charles. Hashtag Rick Lewis.
And, hey, they did a heck of a job casting this show. Like we said, our voices meshed together so well and just fell into the pockets they were supposed to fall in. And it just... It worked out
because
seamlessly.
You're really a girl group from that time period, from the 60s. Who are you modeling yourselves after, the girl groups of the 60s?
There's not one particular group.
You mentioned the Supremes.
The Supremes. We get called the Ronettes all the time.
Even the Ronettes, the Shirelles.
The Shirelles.
Yeah, all of them. They were so awesome. They were amazing singers. Yeah. Amazing singers. So the title sounds more horror than it actually is, but Little Shop of Horrors. But the most horrific part is that carnivorous plant, Audrey, who says, feed me all the time. I understand that Portland Center Stage made their own plant.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah? You want to describe it?
Huge.
Huge, massive, huge. Detailed, just really...
Huge? Like 6 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet?
We say 6 feet, but I feel like it's definitely it's probably about 10.
Yeah. The last it looks plant like that it you see has hydraulics that elevates it.
Yeah. It's huge.
And we start with our little baby.
And
which
it's all
is
green,
probably,
but also lots of other colors.
But what I appreciate about the people who designed it and put it together is that it's not like Bill Fennelly, our director, always says, this is not a bright story. Mm-hmm. And so the plant sometimes can be shown as like this yellow little cute little plant, but this plant, our plant in Portland Center Stage, it's very dark.
It looks like a plant,
but it's not cute at all.
Yeah, at first it starts off kind of cute, as it's growing.
Cute as in small.
That's it.
Because it looks the same as a girl. It's the same plant, same model, just scaled up.
Yeah, because as the story gets more serious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are two people operating it. I mean, one person operating it and one person who's the voice and actually the personality, right? I think that would be challenging to work those two together, you know?
You know, challenging, but it just... The show was written so well, it fits right into place. You know, they rehearse together. They do a lot of rehearsals together. Chaz and Steven, they did a lot of rehearsal together and just learning each other's habits when they talk and things like that. And Chaz is actually looking at a monitor from backstage while he's speaking, and Steven is operating the system. So they're one little unit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one big unit.
Well, what are some of the favorite scenes that you two are in? All three of you are in. Ebony, shout out.
Okay, well, I will say one of my favorite moments is Meek. They say Meek. It's the name of the song, right? Just Meek.
Meek,
Where Seymour is now being offered contracts. He's being offered all this money. And we're like the girls who are like the fangirls who are like, oh my God, Seymour, you're blowing up. But then we tap back out like, see, now you're getting the Meek shall inherit the world. And they will also inherit everything that they have coming to them.
Your whole character just changed while you did that.
No. See? And that's how it is throughout that number. Yeah. That's why it's my favorite number. You see the poles of us.
Right. And how about
I love Jahari? The dentist scene. It is so slimy.
But it's also very
hilarious.
Funny.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Can you describe? It's a masochist. There's a masochist and a sadist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the dentist is sadistic.
He's very sadistic. Yeah. He's a nutcase.
But he also likes helium a lot, too. Or is it nitrous?
Nitrous oxide.
Not helium.
Yeah,
sorry.
Nitrous oxide.
Anything he can get his hands on to get high, that giggle gas.
So we have two tickets to offer for Portland Center Stage. We're talking here. Portland Center Stage at the Armory kicks off its new show with the rock and sci-fi comedy musical Little Shop of Horrors, and it's based on a film by Roger Corman and books and lyrics by Howard Ashe and music by Alan Menken. Performances running through October 16th. Shows are Tuesday through Sunday. Sunday evenings at 7:30 p.m., excluding the 25th and October 2nd, and Saturday and Sunday matinees at 2 p.m., excluding, October 1st, and Thursday matinee at noon. Oh my gosh, they have you working, except September. Well, that's already passed. So for more info, reservations, visit pcs.org or call 503-445-3700. And PCS is located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland, and the show is recommended for ages 12 and up, and it contains theatrical haze. What the heck is theatrical haze?
The smoke machine.
Oh, yeah. Scary.
Fog.
And mature content and information at pcs.org or stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And so we have, I think, two pairs of tickets to offer at Portland Center Stage for Little Shop of Horrors in like a few seconds we have. What's up next for you after a Little Shop of Horrors, Alexis?
Well, I'll be heading back to New York, and we will also do the show again in Cincinnati.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The same show with the same cast? Yeah. Well, that's a nice reunion. So, Johari, I guess know what's coming up for you.
January, we'll get to get together and do this all again in Cincinnati.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's kind of nice. Yeah, awesome. It's not really a road tour. It's just kind of like
it's you get co-production.
A dual tour, co-production.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you have that to look forward to, because often with actresses, it's not easy, shall we say.
Right. You go back on the grind after that job.
That is our life.
You have something to do.
Well, it was so great to have you here. Do you want to just, you know, sing us out with just one little line of anything? Can you sing us out?
Sure. What do you want to do?
You want Little Shop?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay. One, two, three.
Little Shop of Horrors, Little Shop of Terror, call the cop. Little Shop of Horrors,
Thank you so much. Beautiful. And I know I put you on the spot.
It's okay. But
we have so much to thank you for. Alexis Tidwell, Johari Nandi Mackey. Thank you for being here on Stage and Studio.
Thank you for having
membership drive.
Us.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. And a thank you for all the callers who have called so far. And we hope you'll some other folks will join in and give us a call at KBOO at 1-877-500-5266. And support the arts programming and Stage and Studio and all the live program we do on KBOO. With me via phone, I hope, is Jeannie Sakata. She first appeared in Portland in David Henry Wong's M Butterfly in 1993, when Portland Center Stage was still called OSF Portland. And since then, she's performed in many stage productions and film and television roles. I've been following her like crazy. Her play, Hold These Truths, a play inspired by the life of civil rights hero Gordon Hirabayashi. The show opens at Portland Center Stage on October 1st and runs through November 13th. It's the first of PCS's Northwest Stories this season. And joining me via phone is Jeannie Sakata. Hello, Jeannie.
Hi, Dimae.
Hey.
Oh, great.
Do you remember M. Butterfly and I was your understudy?
Very fond memories.
That was so great to see you. And I was always so glad you were healthy so I never had to go on stage.
We had a good time working on that.
Yeah, it was a fantastic show. And it's so great that you're coming back, but it's now Portland Center Stage. Gordon Hirabayashi was a Seattle native who was posthumously awarded the 2012 Presidential Medal of Freedom. When did you first learn about Gordon Hirabayashi?
I first learned about Gordon Hirabayashi in the early 1990s via a documentary film that was shown on PBS. It's called A Personal Matter, Gordon Hirabayashi versus the United States.
Mm.
And this is a documentary film that was made by Seattle documentary filmmaker John DeGraff, who I had the great pleasure and honor of meeting last year when we had our ACT Seattle run. And I was able to talk with him and find out how he made this documentary film. And I told him that had he not made that film, I might not have written this play, because I was so astounded when I watched this film and learned about this story that I had never heard of. And that amazed me and shocked me and kind of angered me, too, that I didn't know about Gordon Hirabayashi. And here I was, a Sansei Japanese-American woman that had grown up in a thriving Japanese-American community. And this was the first time I had ever heard of his resistance to the curfew and exclusion orders that happened during World War II for Japanese Americans on the West Coast. and their parents. So it was a real turning point in my life watching that film.
Well, you know, so much of that still occurs, Jeannie, as you, I'm sure you know, as young people don't often, Asian American history is just not taught. A lot of history, ethnic history, is not taught in the schools. And so it's no surprise to me that you didn't know much about them. I didn't know either until, you know, the 90s. And I think that, you know, this is important work here. At what point did you decide to do this one person show, to have one person playing Gordon Hirabayashi in this?
In the early 1990s, one person shows were not as common as they are now.
Mm.
I had seen a friend, a wonderful pioneering Asian American performer, Jude Nerita.
And oh, yes, yes.
You know,
yeah.
Jude?
Yeah.
And hers was one of the first one person shows I ever saw. And it was amazing seeing an Asian woman, American woman, perform five or six different roles. And then I also saw a beautiful show called, I think it was called Time Flies When You're Alive. It's by Paul Link. And a beautiful show about how his wife suffered through cancer, I believe it was. And
so you were inspired by these shows?
I was inspired by the format because, like I said, they weren't as common as they are now. And then I saw a few more. And then I came across Gordon's story, and immediately I thought, what a great one-person show this would be for an Asian-American actor.
Mm.
We do not have the opportunities in theater very much as Asian Pacific American performers to really show the length and breadth and depth of what we can do. And it struck me immediately that not only would this be kind of an amazing way to tell Gordon's story, but also give an Asian American chance to do something really virtuosic. And I've had, you know, several actors that have done the show and have had that opportunity to really show what they're capable of. So that's made me very proud.
So what is the story?
Gordon's story, I thought it would be great to tell it as a one-person show because I thought that, you know, as a one-person show, Gordon could then embody in his memory and in his actor's body all these characters, numerous characters that he encountered on his journey to win justice for himself. And these included such an array of characters, you know, both American and Japanese immigrants and people from different parts of the country with different accents. And so I thought it would be a fascinating way to tell the story.
Well, how much research did you do? And tell us a little bit about Gordon. I mean, what are some of the challenges he went through?
Well, Gordon was a student at the University of Washington in Seattle. He was in his early 20s. During World War II, and when the first order came out for a curfew for all people of Japanese ancestry on the West Coast, they had to be indoors, you know, at, I think it was 8 o'clock. And Gordon, of course, being an American-born citizen, he was staying at the University of Washington at the YMCA with international students. And the great irony was, of course, that they were free to stay in the library and study or stay in the coffee shop and study. They would study together, these guys that stayed at YMCA. And Gordon, the American-born American citizen, was the one that, because of this curfew order, had to run back to the dorm. And that really rankled him. He said, here I am, an American citizen, and I'm the one having to run back to be at the Y by 8 o'clock. And then, of course, the much worse infringement on his constitutional rights followed soon after, which was the evacuation order, or really it was the order for, you know, mass exclusion of Americans of Japanese ancestry from their homes and communities on the West Coast to go into the camps. So Gordon was not initially going to disobey either of these orders. He went along with both of them. And he came to a point where he said, I cannot go through with this. I am an American citizen. I am entitled to due process of the law before the government deprives me of liberty or deprives me of possessions. And he decided to challenge both the curfew. Of course, the curfew came out first, so he challenged that one first. And then the exclusion orders. Well, but what I love about the story was that this was a gradual enlightenment for him. He was not intending to disobey these orders, and he wrestled and wrestled and wrestled with his conscience until he came to the point, you know, that point that changes all our lives when we say we can't do this and stay whole. And so he defied these orders without really having a game plan as to what he was going to do after he defied them. And it was a story that greatly appealed to me because I thought this is a story that any of us can identify with. You know, this is an ordinary student at the University of Washington. He's struggling with paying his tuition. He's struggling with working out his religious and spiritual beliefs, his political beliefs during a very turbulent time in American history. It's something that I think we can all identify with in our own college years. And then he's thrust into this extraordinary situation where he has to make a life-changing decision.
And it did change his life. And we have our own local hero in Portland, too, with Minoru Yasui, who also challenged the curfew. And it really connects, you know, the Northwest together, I think, these stories. All the West Coast, really. You know, it's still pertinent. The Gordon story, Minoru Yasui story, is still important to, and it's pertinent to the civil rights movement still. And racial profiling is still in the news. How does that connect with your play?
I think that, you know, while I've been very thrilled that the play has been going around the country, I've been very horrified, as I'm sure we all are, to see how the circumstances of the play are so real today. I think, you know, with Donald Trump's candidacy, I read that hate crimes against Muslims and Muslim Americans have doubled.
Yes.
And it's so horrifying to think that these circumstances, which at the time I was thinking I was writing as part of a period piece, are so prevalent now. And so it makes me very emotional. I think we're rehearsing down here in Los Angeles for the Portland production, and we've been remarking in rehearsal just how current so many of these scenes are and how disturbing that is. So I am hoping that Gordon Hirabashi's story and Min's story, Min Yasui's story, at a time when I think we greatly need these stories to give us hope, can be spotlighted in Portland in a way that is constructive and uplifting to all of us.
Well, your play, Hold These Truths, will also have talkbacks with our own community activists here, emceed by Chizao Hata and many memorable people like Peggy Nagai and Nikki Najima Lewis and, June Schumann. I mean, a lot of people here. And so it's great to have that connection with Portland, too. In the final moment here, Gordon Hirabayashi had a lot of memorable quotes, and I was reading a few of them. How much of what he had to say in public have you put into the solo show, Hold These Truths?
That goes back to your question, which I didn't get to. I'm sorry.
Research, yes.
The research for it, yes. I did a lot of research at the University of Washington, where Gordon's wartime letters are housed. A wonderful, wonderful friend of his, Eleanor Ring, who is a Portland resident, and who was planning on attending the play, donated all of the letters that she received from Gordon during World War II. They were good friends, and he corresponded with her while he was in prison and while he was on his hitchhiking trip. And so all of those letters I studied over and over again, and they gave me the voice of the younger Gordon, which I hope is represented in the play. And I also did a lot of research, including Peter Iron's book, Justice at War, which chronicles the stories of Gordon and of Min and of Fred Korematsu and Mitsue Endo, who all legally challenged what happened to the Japanese Americans in one way or another.
Well, I'm excited to see Hold These Truths and to see you, Jeannie. It's been way
too
long.
I'm so excited to see you again, Dumé, and so excited to return to Portland.
Well, it's exciting. So the Northwest Stories series debuts at the Portland Center Stage at the Armory with Jeannie Sakata's Hold These Truths play, inspired by the life of civil rights hero Gordon Hirabayashi. And previews begin October 1st, opening October 7th, and closes November 13th. Shows are at the Ellen By Studio at PCS, and you can go to pcs.org or call them at 503-445-3700 for reservations. And it's located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. You can get all that info at pcs.org or stageandstudio.org, kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Jeannie Sakata, looking forward to seeing you, and congratulations on the success you've had with Hold These Truths. It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to coming to Portland.
All right, you take care.
Thank you.
Next up, we'll talk with we'll talk about The Lower Rooms, a new indie film that's won awards at the Oregon Independent Film Festival. But first, we're going to check in with Membership Central to see if we have tickets left for Hold These Truths. And we also have two books to offer. One is Nisi Shaw's neo-Victorian novel, Everfair, set in the Belgian Congo. Here's a clip from my talk with her last week about why she chose steampunk for her novel, Everfair.
Steampunk genre is very definitely a 19th century glimpse at what could have been. And to me, focusing on the human rights disaster that was King Leopold's reign over the Congo was just a natural thing. I mean, I could not avert my eyes from this tragedy where millions of people died, and I thought it was important to redeem it.
That's art telling a story that is very difficult to tell. And one of the other stories that is difficult to tell is Hold These Truths, Gordon Hirabayashi's solo show at Portland Center Stage. So I hope you get those tickets and get us closer to that $250 match. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio is Barry Hunt, Artistic Director of Soweilu Theater. Hey, Barry. Great to have you back.
Hi, Dee Mae.
And, you know, you are also telling a difficult story, too. Mm-hmm. But through art, which is a beautiful way to use your art. And joining us via phone is Lobsang Tenzin. Hey, Tenzin, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, thank good to hear your voice. It's been a while, Tenzin.
I know. Good to hear your voice, too.
Well, I'm going to start
Hey, Barry.
Hey, Barry.
Hello.
I'm going to start with you, because Soweilu's been making films out of stage plays for some time now. Your new one is an adaptation of The Lower Rooms, which stars Tenzin, and we'll talk to him in a second. Tell us about the story in the film.
The Lower Rooms is the story of a teenage girl set in Portland and her relationship with a survivor of political torture. So Tenzin plays that character. It's not really a film about the torture or the politics or that.
It's really the aftermath.
It's very much their relationship and her curiosity into his circumstances and where that takes the two of them.
And he sort of helps her, too, because she's in an abusive relationship. Is that correct?
Her boyfriend gets involved in a cult. And so the author's drawing parallels between, circumstances that any teen in Portland might run into and the larger political goings-on in the world.
You know? And you adapted that from the play version.
Yes, it was a play by Eliza Anderson.
And you actually adapted it to fit Tenzin's heritage as a Tibetan refugee.
Exactly. It was 20 years ago the writer had set the character in South America. And when we talked to her about making the film, she said, hey, look over at China, see what's going on. And then I came to you, and you recommended Tenzin.
Because, I taught briefly at one term. I taught Tenzin one term at Mount Hood Community College as a video. He's an incredible filmmaker in of itself. And he's actually, you're in New Mexico right now, still studying filmmaking, aren't you, Tenzin?
That's correct. I'm still in Santa Fe University in art design and still pursuing my film.
Well, but you're also an incredible actor. And so you have the lead role and you won Best Actor at the Oregon Independent Film Festival. Congratulations. But how much of you is in there?
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And Tibetan identity, how much of that is in the film that you have brought into it in your character?
I think this character is basically focused on me, and I think it's also good that I don't really have to act something totally different than somebody else's character. And me being Tenzin, I'm actually acting as a Tibetan character, going with the flow with the movie. You know, just like I wanted. It's people have heard so many things about Tibetan, but this is a really good movie that actually Barry has been put my character as a Tibetan and how, you know, the two different culture actually meet together and solve the problem, you know.
Well, you know, sometimes it's harder to act as yourself, Tenzin, than to play a whole nother different character.
Say that again one more time.
Sometimes it's harder to be yourself, you know, in when you're acting.
Correct.
I found with Tenzin, yes, though, that Tenzin, my experience with you is you're such a dynamic and charismatic person, human, and you understood film so well, and you allowed yourself to simply live truthfully. He also took classes with me for a year before, and that might have helped him.
It was a long process making this film, wasn't it? And you have some co-producers of the film. Barry, you want to give a shout out?
Yeah, the narrative is a small local production company. So Sewelu Theater partnered with the narrative, and that's Tyler Warren and Nathan Wilson. And Tenzin got to work very closely with them throughout the process.
Tenzin, what did you learn throughout this whole process?
Oh, it's such an amazing voyage for like a couple of weeks. Only a couple of weeks. I worked with, I took Meisner classes with Barry Hunt at Sewelu Theater and started learning how to face camera. And I was thinking, like, you know, I'm being a filmmaker, I was thinking, like, it's always good to, I'm always behind the camera, it's always good to be at the front of the camera. And when Barry told me that, you know, he's going to do the theater first, I was just a little bit scared and nervous. Like, how do I actually memorize all these things? And then Barry said he's going to make a feature, and I feel more relaxed. And I learned so many things from each, that we have Jenna and Kelly and Kel Lambert and Tyler. They're amazing actors. I was a little bit, intimidated by their acting. You know, and then they were so good at it. And then it's amazing that, you know, we all work together. We always work together. We're always trying to understand who that person is. And they're also trying to understand me, who I'm actually being in a character. And that actually makes me easier to act and to perform in front of the camera. But sometimes it's, Barry knows sometimes when the big word, English big word comes in my head, then I have to act. I have to, English as a second language, but I think the word in my head, I have to perform. So it's kind of a little bit of like a couple fractions delay. I have sometimes hard time understanding the word. So, but it was amazing. And also I learned something like, you know, being a Tibetan also, we're always looking for like, you know, oh, we have to have a free Tibet, safe Tibet. We have to get our country back. But I also learned something when I actually started learning acting is like, I have to understand Chinese people first in order to tell them what actually went in Tibet, you know. So it's kind of a learning process of me being as a human being and also being an activist, being an actor, you know, being a filmmaker. It's always amazing and learning process when I was actually on the film set.
Well, it sounded like it went very, very well. What did you love better, filmmaking or acting?
I think it's a one big family. It doesn't matter whether you're actually in front of the camera or the back of the camera. I would love to do acting any time of my life, and I would like to make an amazing film. And I would like to tell stories. You know, I would like to I wanted to inspire. It's not that I wanted to be a famous actor. I want to be a good actor. You know, I wanted to inspire other Tibetan youngsters. There is another way that you can be an artist. You know. Because right now everybody is, being an activist, you don't really have to go and demonstration and do something else. But being yourself and learning who you are, and then you can actually bring Tibetan issues through acting.
Well, I think being an art activist is an amazing thing, you know, and putting your activism into your art. And I want to say, Barry, you know, congratulations on being nominated for Best Picture and Best Drama of the Lower Rooms at Oregon Independent Film Festival. What are the future plans for the film?
For the film, continue the festival process. Usually you ride that out for about a year and then looking for distribution. We made a previous play into a film, The Further Adventures of Anson Buell in No Man's Land. That had its journey, won Best Cinematography in Santa Fe a year ago, and then found distribution. So we have one film in distribution, so we have high hopes that this one will have a life as
so
well.
So you might have some other stage adaptations then for
We do have a third one planned.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. What is it you want to get? You want
to? It's Luke Heyerman's piece, The Brightest Thing in the Dark Tonight, again, produced some 20 years ago. So we're going back to these early journeys with writers and giving their stories a new life.
So Soweilu Theater is actually becoming a production company then, of a media production company.
A combination. Yeah.
So in the final few seconds here, Tenzin, are you coming back to Oregon? I know you're coming back for the showing this Friday at 9:45 at Clinton Street, but after you're done with your degree, are you moving back to Portland?
Oh, I think the Portland is kind of my second home besides from Lhasa, the Tibet. Definitely, I would love to come back to Portland and wanted to see all these amazing artists. Because while I was in Portland, I only studied. I never actually went through filming. And now I have so many. I think it's when I'm coming back to Portland, I see a totally different image of perspective, how I'm going to shoot these things and write a story. And yes, I would definitely come back to Portland.
Well, I have a bit of pride when I follow your career and as you're studying in Santa Fe and you post things like, oh, I work with Tina Fey or I work with George R.R. Martin, and, you know. So I'm really proud of you, Tenzin. So, you know, I'm very happy for your success.
Thank you very much.
Lobsang Tenzin and Barry Hunt, thank you for joining us on Stage and Studio. And I'm going to give more shout-outs to the film. The one showing of The Lower Rooms at the Oregon Independent Film Festival this Friday, September 23rd. At 9:45 p.m. at Clinton Street Theater. That's located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Thanks for joining us on this membership drive show. Please show your support of KBOO and Stage and Studio by calling now at 1-877-500-5266 or KBOO. We have tickets to shows.